What's up, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of the Arnies. We're three starving sailors destined to die a horrible death in the New World. I'm Matt Johnson, and once the arrows start flying, consider myself resigned to my fate.
I'm Keith Baker, and Osaka doesn't seem that bad for the 1600s.
And I'm Austin Terry, and I wholeheartedly agree with the feudal Japanese's stance on bathing.
Me too. Today's gonna be a fun one. We're getting back into what people are calling prestige TV. That's always a fun thing to talk about. You know, we did prestige movies last week with Dune Part 2. That was a fun one. So I'm excited to get back into TV. It's always a good time. And this show kind of snuck up on me. I didn't really hear anything about it. I don't think I even saw a trailer for it. I didn't know this was a big deal. But in case you're like me going into this blind, Shogun is what we're talking about today, and it follows the collision of two ambitious men from different worlds and a mysterious woman samurai. John Blackthorne, a risk-taking English sailor who ends up shipwrecked in Japan, a land whose unfamiliar culture will ultimately redefine him. Lord Toranaga, a shrewd, powerful daimyo at odds with his own dangerous political rivals. And Lady Mariko, a woman whose invaluable skills but dishonorable family ties, who must prove her value and allegiance. So lots of good stuff right there. But guys, I just kind of want to dive right into it. Because I want to know, were you guys just as blind to this as me? Had you heard about this? I guess it's a landmark book. Which was made into a really popular miniseries like years and decades ago, I guess, at this point. So this was kind of a big remake. But did you know anything about it? And then I'm super curious to hear non-spoiler thoughts on the series so far now that three episodes are currently out.
Yeah, I had only heard about it because I've been binging Fargo on Hulu. And like every episode of Fargo, they played a trailer for the show. And I mean, the trailers looked incredible. And then, of course, the hype kept building as each episode started releasing. And this has been a really fun binge, these first three episodes. I'm wholeheartedly into it. I find this time period so fascinating, and a time period that I myself didn't know a lot about, especially from the Japanese perspective. So seeing all these cultures colliding, all the different religions come into fruition in this feudal Japanese time period is really cool. And then it does kind of feel like a more realistic historical Game of Thrones. And it's got an all-star cast, Hiroyuki Sanada as the lead. You can't go wrong there. As each character's motivation gets more and more revealed each episode and all the allegiances start forming, I'm kind of getting more and more bought into the series. So I think it's been a great three episode premiere so far.
I'm kind of with you, Austin. I'm really digging the story so far, this time period. I'm fascinated with the whole trade system they had going on with some Europeans and then how some are not even known at all either. It's always cool to see stories that take place only like 300 or 400 years ago, and these people didn't even know about America or Western Europe or Eastern Europe.
And nobody can find Japan, which is kind of fascinating. Like, it's just this little island nation that everyone's trying to find, and no one can understand how the Portuguese know where it is.
Yeah, there's definitely some confusion going on with what the world looks like to some of these people and what their perspective is. But yeah, I'm liking the characters so far. The action's really cool. I have a feeling we're going to get a lot more of that. So far I'm liking it. I think it's growing. It was the first episode, I was not too sure. And then once the second and third episode came out, I was like, yeah, this is really cool. I'm liking this a lot.
Yeah, very, pleasantly surprised just based on the fact that I hadn't heard about it. And yeah, I'm very much invested. I'm very in. I think it's fascinating. I'm loving the world. I'm loving the perspectives. It's a big ensemble cast, but I think they've played it well in these first three episodes, where there are still some characters that we haven't gotten a lot of screen time with, but I feel like we will. But yeah, so far with how many characters there are, it's really interesting to get all these motivations, kind of learn more about them, like the hierarchy and the political just nature and ramifications of what's going on is like, so it's dense, but it's really fascinating too. So I've been getting more and more excited kind of the more the curtain kind of gets pulled back on that and see each person's different perspectives, and what they want seems to be wildly different person to person. And it's really, really just cool. And I'm loving the acting. I'm loving the visuals. But yeah, I don't know. I don't really have too much else to say without probably veering into spoiler territory, but it just gets like a major recommendation for me. I think the scale of it, both in terms of story and visuals, I think, like Austin already mentioned, you know, there's a reason that other people are also comparing this to like the Game of Thrones level prestige TV. I don't know what the budget on this show is, but it kind of has that feeling of like, this could be like $100 million per episode or something crazy like that. So it's always cool to see something just, I don't know, have this. I mean, it's truly an epic. And I love epics, especially when they're like historical epics. In particular, those might be my favorite kind. So yeah, it's living up to the epic nature. All, like not only in the action sequences, but also in just like the characters and like the dynamic like that they share. So I'm loving it so far. Whenever the third episode ended, when I was wrapping it up, I was like, oh, I kind of wish there was more. I want to keep going. I want to watch the next one, but I got to wait a couple days. And then, yeah, there's lots of episodes left, and I'm going to be impatient week to week with this one, I think.
Yeah, I think the best thing they're doing is they're keeping everybody's motivations just mysterious enough to where every episode you kind of get a new, like a new carrot to keep you going. And like everyone's, you think you have people's allegiances figured out, and then somebody does something and it kind of twists your whole perspective of who's allied with who. So that's been like the most ongoing, can't wait for the next episode nature of the show for me. Like the action stuff is great, but the reason I'm tuning in is for these motivations, which is, I think, really well done by the people behind the camera as well.
Yeah, I think I'm going to go back and rewatch the first episode. I think I missed a lot in that first episode because you're just trying to figure out what's going on. And there's a lot of, you know, foreign languages being spoken, obviously. So you're trying to read the subtitles, but also pay attention to what's going on screen, too. And then once I got into episodes 2 and 3, I started figuring out the houses and the families and everything.
I will say I was having the same struggles with it being a subtitled show and then also all of these complex natures and alliances going on. FX actually has a really handy viewer's guide that you can watch, like you can have up on your phone while you're watching the show, and it lays out like each character, and it's by episode, so there's no spoilers in it. But that helped me like really figure out who's with who.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, I think I might check that out as well. But yeah, you know, I don't, like I said, don't have much to say. It's always nice that I can give a glowing recommendation to something, and I'm glad to hear it. It sounds like you guys are on that same page. So yeah, I don't know if you're like us and you didn't really know too much about this show, or you just completely were in the dark on it, this, definitely you got to check this out. I think there's something for everybody here, and it's going to be one of those shows, like, despite if you're someone that's not like, I'm not really into historical fiction or just like historical dramas in general, or like the epic stuff can get a little much for me, I still think if like those aren't your go-to genres, you should still watch this, because I think you'll be surprised at, you know, what's happening. Like, I think you're going to easily find several things to pull that you'll like that will kind of keep you going, like Austin said. So I think with that, let's drop the spoiler warning and get into this, guys. All right, everybody, welcome to spoiler territory for the first 3 episodes of Shogun over on FX and Hulu. Before we get into all of our thoughts and all the things that we want to dive into specifically, let's do some cast, crew, and critical reception talk.
All right, so Shogun is created by Rachel Kondo and Justin Marks, who are a husband and wife team most well known for their contributions to The Jungle Book and Top Gun Maverick. The first 2 episodes were written by Kondo and Marks, with Shannon Goss joining for episode 3. Jonathan Van Tulleken directed the first 2 episodes, with Charlotte Brandstorm doing the third. Our score is composed by Atticus Ross, Leopard Ross, and Nick Chubba. And of course, based on the 1975 book, Shogun, by James Clavell.
All right, starting off, we got Hiroyuki Sanada as Lord Yoshi Torunaga. We got Cosmo Jarvis as John Blackthorne. Anna Sawai as Toda Mariko. Tadanobu Asano as Yabushige. Takehiro Hira as Ashido. Tommy Basto as Father Martin Alvito. And we got Fumi Nakaido as Ochiba Nokata. All right, guys, there's our cast and crew. Any positives, any negatives? What do we got?
I'm going to give my highlight to Anna Sui as Mariko. I've found this character kind of having to live in both worlds between like all of the Japanese games and then all of the Catholic games being really fascinating. And her backstory is the one I'm most interested in learning, because it seems like she still has some mysterious stuff that hasn't been revealed to us yet. I also find her, like, the way Anna Sui's like calm demeanor just like continues on through each episode despite every situation she's in. She seems like she is all in with Lord Torunaga, but then she's doing a great job of teasing that there's still something beneath the surface there that we haven't seen yet.
I'll go ahead and just shout out Cosmo Jarvis as John Blackthorne. It's kind of cool to watch him interact with the different cultures. I thought he played this part really well. I'm interested in how the characters play off of this, and I like that we do get in, I guess, episode 3, that they start kind of asking about his culture, and he's kind of trying to figure out their culture. So as a whole, I like the whole cultural collisions that we're getting, and how some things will overlap, and then some things are definitely different. So
yeah, Torunaga making him draw the map was like the most high stakes part of this show. And it's so, he's drawing with a stick in the sand, but I was so invested to see like have the Japanese learn like about the broader parts of the world that they don't know about yet was so cool. And then also like having him mark all the Portuguese bases and then discovering they've been duped was so cool.
Yeah, the show has a good way of making like kind of scenes that would be, you know, shot or portrayed as like maybe a comical scene or like just a whatever, just like an exposition or needed scene. Like this show has those same types of scenes, but there's like always way more stakes to them, which is really cool. But yeah, I mean, I don't think it's any surprise. I've talked about him before on the show. I love whenever he pops up in anything, but my highlight's going to be the lead, Hiroyuki Sanada, as Lord Torunaga. I just think he's great. And I love seeing him get like more than just a supporting role. I like seeing him in the lead. I also saw he's an executive producer on the show. So he was definitely like amped, I think, to get this on the screen. But yeah, just a fascinating character. And already the curtain's being pulled back a little bit with some flashbacks in episode 2 and I think some dialogue in episode 3, like kind of, you know, trying to fully understand why he's doing what he's doing. It seems like at least as of now, he's trying to fulfill the Daimo's last wish and protect the sun. And it's like, well, shouldn't he be like applauded for that? But I just love that it just seems like the other regents are just kind of jealous, petty people. So
yeah,
there, it actually isn't really about honor or anything like how they can maybe establish in episode 1. So I'm loving that. But just, yeah, watching him like navigate this political chessboard is so, so fascinating. Like whether he's like making a move like quitting or like through words or something like that. It's cool to see, but it's also cool just to see him like orchestrate in episode 3, like getting himself inside the carriage instead of his wife's, just so he can go with them to the boats. And it's like, oh, yeah, he's pretty smart. So it's fun to watch smart characters be smart in something. So, yeah, I think he's great. And obviously he always looks good in action, too. So he's kind of giving you a bunch of different things in a performance like this.
He's also got some sick burns in this show. Like whenever he tells a lot of the Catholics, like, oh, I wonder if you'd be so devout if you weren't just being bestowed riches on by all these priests, like things like that. He's roasting everybody.
All right, guys. Well, with that, it is time to go a little bit deeper and get into our freeform discussion. The main part of our show where each of us just writes down a few points that we want to kind of expand on, get into all the spoilers and just talk through it all. So I don't know. Where should we start today, do you think?
I want to start with kind of our main POV character, which is John Blackthorne. He is the one that I think I would say getting the most screen time at this point, and the one that we definitely see walking the line between cultures. And he, from the Japanese perspective, he's the barbarian. From his perspective, he thinks the Japanese are the barbarian. So that's kind of an interesting twist, too. But how are you guys feeling, like, the more time we spent with him about his motives? And I could see him becoming an antagonist towards the end of the show, given how much he is like still trying to fulfill his mission as a pirate, but then it seems like he's getting more invested with Lord Torunaga and his side of things. So how are you guys feeling just about his motive so far?
I think it's a great POV character. It's not reinventing the wheel, obviously. It's kind of what you'd expect from a show like this that needs like that outsider POV perspective. But that doesn't, you know, prevent the fact that Cosmo Jarvis, I think, is doing a great job, like Keith mentioned earlier. And yeah, just like getting more into this character, I think the more layers that get pulled back, the more kind of intriguing it is. And to the point where by the end, I don't really think it matters to Lord Torunaga if he is a pirate or not. I mean, I think he's basically saying whenever he's like, we're getting this translated, it'll take a long time. He's like, I know you're a pirate, but they're not going to kill him later. Like, I think it's, you know, it's what we might expect is that they're probably going to become like respected friends that respect each other by the end.
I think Torunaga, too, also has to keep up appearances. So when he has his whole thiefdom kind of watching him, he says, like, we will translate this. We will follow our rules. But I think in the back of his mind, he knows, I don't care if this guy's a pirate. He has the tactics and weapons that will give me the edge over the other regents.
Yeah. But yeah, so we'll see. I mean, they could definitely surprise me as the show goes on. But I expect him to only get more entrenched in this culture as we go on.
Do you think things will shift for him when he finally gets reunited with his crew and gets his ship back?
So I don't know. We'll see. I mean, I think there will be some kind of expected things as we go on talking about the future of the season. I think, you know, because in that same scene where Torunaga is like, we're going to get this translated. He also said like before that, I think, or Blackthorne said before that, he was like, you know, of course I will like stay and I will help you and I will train that, you know, this section of this militia like that you are asking me. The only thing I ask in return, though, is, you know, my crew and a ship or my ship. So like if he finds out later that that is a deal that can't be honored, then I think we'll probably have like maybe an episode or two or maybe he's at odds and maybe scheming against the Japanese. So, you know, there's probably going to be some predictable stuff where it's not all going to be like sunshine and roses in terms of their kind of relationship here. But I think that'll make it all the more interesting. But Yeah, I could see him, you know, scheming as the show goes on, but I think he's probably largely going to be scheming with Toranaga because he's a pretty good schemer. So they're probably going to have some fun scheming together.
And you mentioned Mariko a second ago. I'm really curious to see more of her motivations get revealed because whenever that assassin storms the compound, she has knowledge of like, yeah, some people train their whole lives for a single kill. And like she came from this specific sect. And then when they get attacked, we see Mariko is very capable with a spear and not doesn't really flinch in combat. So she kind of it seems like she has more knowledge of like the seedier underground of Japan culture. And I'm curious, like what her true background is.
She does seem to be respected in this community by most, at least. Maybe not her husband, her dead husband. Sorry. But it does seem like there is a push and pull there that I believe Toranaga referenced in episode one when he first talks with her that like. Doesn't she has like there's a what's the word like a dishonorable aspect to her lineage or like her family? Like there's something in her family. I feel like they said I can't remember what it was, but that like there's something about her family line that like brings dishonor. So maybe that's why she isn't even higher up. So I'm sure we'll find out about all the ins and outs of that, too.
Oh, and the Catholic priest says, like, you have confessed dark thoughts and urges to me. Do you still have those? So there's definitely other stuff going on with her.
I guess that's what I'm kind of confused about still, and I guess we'll find out more later, but with the houses, maybe with Ishido, I guess since he kind of seems to be the more evil or bad one out of the bunch, I guess, maybe she wants him dead.
I think that's also a nice little switcheroo that the show made over the course of the first three episodes, because yeah, whenever like they're initially talking to Toranaga and like basically saying, you know, we're stripping you of this. And that probably means that he will, you know, die. And then they even all say that later on, that, like, their plan is for him to be dead. It does seem like Ishido is the lead villain. But something I've also liked as the episodes have gone on is it does seem like he's the only one of the remaining regents that still is trying to have some semblance of honor. Like, now it seems like the other ones, like the Christian ones, are like, they're like the murderous, like, most fucked up ones, it seems.
Well, their income is now threatened by this guy.
So. Yeah, I'm liking kind of the regents, too. But yeah, and is he the most villainous of them? I don't know. But I mean, it seems like they're setting up Ishido to kind of be the main, I guess, antagonist of this show. At least that's what it seems like right now, for at least between him and Toranaga. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know if I would say most villainous, but definitely the most ambitious. Like, yeah. He wants to be the guy running everything. And it seems like he is willing to throw Japan back into another war to accomplish that goal.
Yeah, actually, now that we're kind of talking about it, when it comes to, we can talk about other, like, our other main characters and, like, motivations and stuff, but one of the most fascinating ones, and talk about a switcheroo, you know, it's only been three episodes, like I already said, with, like, the other, like, some of the other side characters, but we're getting lots of, like, one character starting in one place, and then by the end of just these few episodes, you're like, damn, where the hell are they going? I think a good example of that is Tadanobu Asano playing Yabushige, who, whenever you first meet him, it's like, oh, okay, I guess this uncle character is kind of like an arrogant prick. Like, at one point, he's, like, trying to get, like, all the ships and people for himself. And then, like, what are the characters like? Well, no, you owe this to Lord Toranaga. And he's like, oh, yes, of course, I would never dishonor him. It's like, there is an interesting relationship there, because, like, he, like, has to work with Lord Toranaga. But then there's also the moment where he's making deals with Ishido, which he doesn't follow through with. But now Toranaga knows that he is kind of betraying him, but also is keeping him close, and they're still kind of buddy-buddy. So, I mean, that's easily a character that could become, like, a full-fledged villain by the end, or someone that finds redemption. Like, I don't know. Like, there's lots of, like, flip-flopping, and, you know, characters are very, like, what's the word? They're kind of loose in this show. It's like, their motivations can change very quickly based on very small things. It's like, oh, you're ambitious, and you want to, you know, increase your fief, like,
that's the thing with him.
I'll betray Toranaga for that, maybe. It's like,
yeah, but they also, once they reveal what a character wants, they kind of stick to that. Like, Yabushige, in the beginning, is trying to gain all these weapons so he can find a way to increase his fiefdom. And then when Toranaga just agrees to expand his fiefdom, he's willing to stay loyal because that's what he wants. So, I'm kind of liking that because the motivations stay mysterious. But then as soon as you learn, okay, this is what this character wants, it's kind of easier to track why they're doing certain things. I also, with Yabushige, they do in the beginning say this guy has like a fascination with how people die, and he boils that one sailor alive. So they haven't really gone back to that, but I'm curious to see what happens as they end up in more combat situations and like more like little wars and skirmishes start breaking out.
Yeah, Yabushige was cracking me up in this show. He was the other one I was going to shout out besides Blackthorn in our cast and crew highlights. I like that him and Toranaga kind of have a weird, like almost like a telepathic type communication where it's like, oh, it was bandits. He's like, ah, yes, I'm sure it was those bandits that did that.
You're always in the right place at the right time.
Yeah, you're always right there, Yagashibe.
The second time you've brought me this barbarian, I guess I have to thank you twice.
That weird, bandit seems funny crazy. Line. Whenever the bandits come in and then kill all the guards to save Blackthorn, and then you're like, oh, okay, that's how they're doing. I guess that makes sense. But then Yabushige just walks in and then like, doesn't he like throw coin to the bandits and they're like, oh, thank you. And then he just immediately kills all the bandits.
Yeah. And then he says I happened to be there because bandits attacked him and I saved him.
So he had to, I guess, keep that story. He has to kill them so they're like, there's bodies as proof or something. It's crazy. They're going to some wild lengths here.
I think originally, though, he was supposed to pay the bandits to take Blackthorn to Ishido, and then he decided to stay loyal to Toranaga. Let's dive into just the time frames and boundaries of the world at this point. We kind of mentioned in the beginning, but it is really cool to see, from the Japanese perspective, all of these new cultures coming into their lands and them trying to figure out, like, what are the boundaries of the world? And them finding out that the new world, like, Western cultures have already like divvied up these lands when they control them and things like that is really interesting. And then also seeing like the Portuguese Catholics at contest with the Protestants and how that's coming onto the mainland. Like they're doing such a good job of all of this, these complicated historical matters like coming to fruition on a drama has been really cool. And it like stays really interesting. It doesn't feel like you're in the history class or anything like that.
Yeah. Like just the idea of them like working through and getting, you know, the Catholics and those high ranking positions. I mean, that's pretty. I mean, because then you think about, well, there's already two on the council, basically. So it's like, damn, like they're actually able to do that is crazy. Yeah, it is really just wild to think about real life. Like, really, like in the 1600s, it's like in the grand scheme of time, very recent. And like, yeah, there's just so much unknown. Like, yeah, it is crazy. It's wild to think about.
It has to be so wild to be a Japanese citizen and then having all these Westerners show up on your island who, like, maybe at that point in time, you think this is all the world is like the Japanese islands. And then all of a sudden, and like, it's got to feel like aliens arriving from a different planet.
I mean, the Portuguese characters are certainly interesting to watch in a different way, especially after that reveal comes out. So like in like the second half of episode 2, maybe, and like all of episode 3, kind of watching them try and scramble. And like, it seems like for once they're not all on the same page. It's like some of the priests are now saying like, well, counselor who, you know, shares my beliefs because I so lovingly taught them to you. They're basically telling him, go kill this man. Like they're priests. They're like, you need to assassinate John Blackthorn. And like these fucking high ranking councilmen in Japanese society are like, I will do that. It's like, whoa, that's wild. And then just like, I mean, even something smaller scale, like watching the Portuguese captain, the pilot, who is just, he wants to leave. He needs to get trading. So he's like, I'm taking the ship and leaving. They're like, well, we haven't gotten permission to leave. And he's like, I'm leaving. So it's like,
says, I don't need your permission. I serve the Spanish crown.
Yeah, exactly. So like watching them scramble after kind of it all comes out about these bases was really crazy to watch as well.
And I love that one Portuguese sailor who interacts with Blackthorn. Who keeps calling him English. That guy's great. I hope he sticks around for a while.
I haven't seen that actor in so long. I remember that was the guy in Lost that never aged.
Oh.
But yeah, I'm liking the beard. Yeah, it's looking pretty good. But yeah, I kind of got the feeling that he was going to be a one and done character in episode 1. I was like, do we really? I think they even like say goodbye to each other at that point. Like, do we need more? I'm so glad he's been in every episode so far.
Yeah.
It seems like there's no reason he wouldn't stick around for more. But yeah, I love that scene whenever he like repays his debt to Blackthorn by just slightly letting him able to command his little ship without like passing him and not going over these rocks. This is kind of like a weird thing to say. I think the show has like really good use of swearing too.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like it's kind of hard to write swearing and it's hard to make it seem improvised. But whenever Blackthorn is basically like, we're going to Osaka, but we're leaving you behind. Sorry. And like him just going, fuck that. And then just grabbing the wheel essentially. And then just like, no, we're going to do it anyway. And watching him like over the episodes, kind of, obviously he's not speaking a lot of Japanese yet, but he's like been able to find a more, I guess, natural way to communicate with them. Like, I love that scene where he's like sound the drums. And like, while he's like piloting the ship, he's like banging his foot on the ground. And he's like, he's wanting them to go faster. And it's like, they're actually kind of understanding what he's meaning for once. It's really cool.
I love that he's saying the wrong word in that scene. And then the actual ship captain is like, he means faster, faster.
I remember when my mom was first telling me about the show, she was saying one thing that she was really interested in was how like the Portuguese characters, some of the more nefarious ones, are going to like naturally be able to twist Blackthorne's words. And that was also like a really kind of something that wouldn't be high stakes in any other show. But like it felt so high stakes every time like somebody was translating for him and just like purposefully like saying the wrong thing. Like he almost died for it in episode one when that one guy is just saying like, this is a heretic. He's a demon. We need to kill him. So like there's tons of high stakes stuff there, too.
I love how Toranaga knows the Catholics might twist his words. So he brings in Mariko to make sure what the priest is telling him is accurate.
That was cool. You knew the scene before because they had like a really smartly done way. Like they had like the priest that came in first, or Father Martin or whatever it is. They had that scene where like his higher up was basically telling him like, you know, just twist his words, make sure Toranaga knows this is the bad guy. And so like then he immediately goes in to probably do that. But whenever he sees Mariko there, then he like every single word that Blackthorne says, he translates honestly. He's like, fuck, I got outplayed here.
Yeah, so let's touch on the action a little bit. One of my favorite scenes as far as action goes was the attempted assassination on the heretic, or we thought it was going to be Toranaga. What did you guys think about that one?
It was so quick and bloody. Like, I kind of forget that this show has an R rating because it's a lot of dialogue. But then when the action starts, like, it's very in your face and throats are getting slit and blood splattering all over the clean, like, dojo walls and all that. Like, that scene was great. I also love the wood scene. Just, like, they're in pitch black and then all of a sudden all these flaming arrows start raining on the ground. It all looks great. And they're not overusing it. Like, there could be a way to do this show and, like, overly rely on samurai duels and things like that. But when it's used, it feels important, but I would say it's still only like 10% of the show so far.
Yeah, I imagine as we get more towards the end, it'll get ramped up and you're going to get more of these like large scale battles. At least that would be my assumption. But so far, I've really been liking them as ways to break up some of the like dialogue heavy scenes or anything like that. Even though I love the dialogue heavy scenes, but it almost makes like the action feel surprising, like to your point, every time it happens. And we've already gotten so many different types of action. Like you said, we got some like ship-related stuff, which was really cool, especially since it's 1600. So it's like there are cannons and things like that, but at least so far there's less reliance on that. Like that action scene really was just like speed-based, which was kind of interesting to see. But yeah, like we've already gotten something larger scale in the woods. I think the thing I loved about that is it kind of highlights that I think back then especially, like there is just naturally, I think, going to be lots of confusion on the battlefield. Like the second Toranaga walks out and people see him, they're like, oh, shit. And Ishido's people are there. Then they start having to fight each other and also fight the people on the ridge they're shooting down, who's with another one of the regents. Like it's just a wildly confusing scene in a really good way. And then, yeah, then you get something like super small scale, like that assassin in the hallway scene. That was so sick. Like, I loved that scene. And yeah, the blood in that scene especially really like caught me off guard in a really good way. The action, like you said, there hasn't been a lot so far, but it's been really cool. Even something like super scary, like whenever like Rodriguez and Yabushige almost drown in episode one, like that was another kind of high stakes action scene. So yeah, we've gotten like a wide variety so far.
I am too excited touching on that assassin again to learn more about, I guess, just the different factions too. Because like I said earlier, Mariko does say that this assassin like trained her whole life for one kill and like went to some, I guess, school or like something like that. So I'm excited to see more of those things get revealed.
Oh yeah, she worked there for years, that she said, and never made the move. It was supposed to be at a certain time.
Probably had to wait for the order too,
right?
To come through.
True. Yeah, it was just like something that could happen at any time, right? I mean, there's got to be some like crazy, like I feel like even larger scale battles as this goes on.
Got to imagine there's going to be some large-scale naval battle too, just with Blackthorne being a sailor and the Portuguese black ship leaving, and will probably now come back with more, probably an armada, because they now think their territory is threatened by an Englishman being there.
Yeah, definitely. I feel like we're definitely going to get a Torunaga showdown with somebody, like a one-on-one sword duel.
For sure.
Will he duel Ishido in their like decked out, sick looking samurai armor?
Oh man, the armor, even though we've seen like levels of the armor so far. Like we haven't seen like a bunch of characters in like the full garb. Like they're still teasing that, because like whenever characters walk through the hallway and just like look in a room, you just see like the really sick armor like on the wall. And like that's definitely coming off at some point, because we gotta get in that. Yeah, I'm excited for the suit up sequences. But yeah, I think we're in store for a lot of great action and I don't know, like a lot of great political stuff as the season goes on. I don't even really know specifically what's going to happen. I guess I know like a couple potential things, like, because this is, I guess, loosely based on, you know, real stuff that did happen back then. So in terms of like who maybe comes out on top, I'm pretty sure I know the answer to that, but obviously I won't say anything. But I'm still excited just for the journey and how they're going to do this. And like, you know, it's one thing for like Torunaga, you know, either I suppose his options are he dies or he succeeds in kind of overthrowing this and getting the Daimyo's son in a position to, you know, take over as heir when in a few years, whenever they are of age. Mariko, you know, it'll be interesting to see what her fate is in this society. But then someone like Blackthorn, it's like, really, what does this character do at the end of the show? That'll be super interesting to see. In episode 3 is when he, I believe, talks more about, you know, his family and kind of expands upon like, well, I do have a family, but like when it comes to my daughter, for example, I left England, like, you know, I've never met her. So like, does he leave at some point? Does he become fully in this society? I don't know. So I'm very curious what the fates of all these characters are.
I do think they are setting up a romance with him and Mariko too. And I'm curious he like earns a seat at the table maybe by the end of the show and decides to stay in Japan. And like maybe that's his journey as he arrives thinking he's going to conquer Japan and then kind of gets invested in their society and way of life too. I did also see the creators said that this will not be an ongoing show. This is a one and done. They wrote it to be the book and only the book, and they have no interest in it becoming like a long franchise for Hulu too. So like that as well, just staying committed to your vision and not trying to drag things out.
Yeah.
Yep. Seems like they're sticking with the miniseries nature that the original, you know, miniseries was as well. So I like that too.
What about, what do y'all think about Torunaga and Yabushige's relationship? They kind of have like a weird friendship, but he also thinks that Yabushige wants his power as well. So do you think they're going to stay somewhat allies, or do you think Yabushige is just in it for himself? Because that's what it kind of seems like to me, that Yabushige just doesn't care about any of these lords or houses. It seems like he's just all in it just for his own satisfaction.
I think Yabushige is back to being kind of fully invested with Torunaga now, because Ishido promised him his seat on the Regent's Council, but that's not what he wanted. He wanted his fiefdom expanded, and that's what Torunaga is able to give him. And the Ishido samurais also say, like, Yabushige betrayed us, so Ishido knows that now. So I think by him choosing to stay and fight with Torunaga's soldiers, I think he did finally pick a side, and I think he is sticking with Torunaga. I am nervous, though. I'm nervous at some point that Hiroyuki Sanada will end up dying, and I just don't want to see that happen. I like Hiroyuki so much.
I don't know. My feeling as of now, like, I guess basically like a third of the way through the season and the show at large, I think all the main ones are going to make it. As for like Yabushige, I don't think he'll go back to Ishido, but I could see him like abandoning Torunaga, just because they've established like from his first scene that he's a very selfish character. So he could leave if it means that, I don't know, we'll see. I could see him dying. But I guess maybe as a closing thing, I am curious. It's already a big ensemble, but there are like several characters that seem like they would have a very big importance to the story that we have like just gotten not too much of yet. Not saying that in a bad way, but like Torunaga has a family. He has like a son that's with them at the end. I'm curious, like, is there any expansion of that? Yeah, I'm curious, like, what some of these other, like, key family members or people in the society, how they could be involved with this. Also, shout out to his wife. I think she's so funny. I like their conversations. So like, they're just, like, kind of goofy.
And then does
together.
He also have, like, a concubine that's pregnant as well?
That's how I read that scene.
Yeah.
Is that she was pregnant with his child. But clearly that wasn't an issue, because, like, they were all sharing a meal together. So I guess that maybe that was just a part of that society at the time, maybe high ranking people. I don't know. That's how I read it too. And then maybe to close out, I just thought like the ending of episode 3, whenever he's like teaching him how to dive, is like kind of cute, but also like just fun. And then like how like once he gets exhausted from doing that, that's when Porn Dog is like, I'm challenging you to a race. So I'm already really liking where their relationship is at after just a few episodes. But yeah, very excited to see it grow more.
Did you like his cloth like tidy whities while he's diving?
I thought that was pretty funny. I was like, there's really, he should just be doing this naked, frankly. Like, there's no reason loin to be wearing that. All right, guys. Well, with that, before we close out here, of course, we got to do some Arnie's Podcast Awards, the part of our show where we take something from the project that we just talked about and we give an award to something positive, negative, something in between, whatever it is. It just has to be award worthy in our eyes. So, guys, what is it going to be this time?
I'm going to give the Sickest Burn Award to Blackthorn, actually, whenever he's yelling at that one samurai and like losing his mind about the purity of a woman and all that. And then he just ends with, and your hair looks like a pony's tail. And then he turns immediately to Mariko and says, hope I didn't go too far with the ponytail comment. That had me cracking up. And then whenever Mariko says, like, are women really pure in England? And he's like, absolutely not. Like, it's so great.
Okay, there's lots of talks about baths in this show. We get a really horrible death with one of them. Like, this guy gets boiled in a bathtub alive. That was horrible to watch. So I won't give an award to that guy, but I will give an award for the, I guess I'll just call it the much needed bath award. And that will also go to John Blackthorn, because he denies a bath. And he's like, two baths in 1 week. Do you want me to catch the flux or something like that? And she's like, you smell like shit. He's like,
he's like he literally is like, has dirt all over his face in that scene. I'll just keep it simple. I think I'm going to do the Good Riddance Award. I did kind of chuckle to myself. I'm not calling it a negative, but I did think it was funny how like Mariko's husband is just such a dick the entire show. And then he's given like this final stand where I think we're supposed to be emotional. And I was just like, good riddance. You suck.
Yeah, I'm glad they got rid of him early. I didn't want to see him continue to be a dick to Mariko. So
I'm glad to get a character like that out of the way, just because it's like, not because I need like different characters to hook up, but it's like, are they going to do like some like typical like love triangle or something here? I was like, I don't want to see that. So whenever he got swarmed by 50 men at once, I was like, thank you.
Yeah, whenever he dies and then John goes up to her, he's like, I'm sorry about your husband. And she's just like, like she's just kind of smiling and doesn't really react at all.
We also know Blackthorn's like, I'm not really sorry about your husband.
Yeah, he actually winked like after he said, I'm sorry about your dead husband. Wink, wink. he's like, at that moment, he starts like thinking to himself, he's like, holy shit, I'm so glad I packed my really long, wavy cloth bathing suit. I'm going to show her later.
Wait till she sees my man thong.
All right. Well, with that, everybody, before we dive down the whole man thong rabbit hole, thank you all so much for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, make sure you hit that follow button so you never miss our upcoming content. Also, please share us with your friends if you enjoyed this episode. We really appreciate that to continue to grow our show. Please leave us reviews as well. Even if you don't want to write anything, leaving us a 5-star review over on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever your podcasts, it does help us out. At the Arnie's is our social, and the Arnie's.media is the website. Of course, we'll be back next Tuesday with another episode.
And last week, we talked about what could quite possibly be the biggest movie of the year. We covered Dune Part 2, so if you've gone out to theaters, if you want to hear us break it all down, be sure to go check that episode out.
And lastly, we want to hear from you, so please send us a message on Instagram at the Arnie's or email us thearniesmedia@gmail.com. What did you think of Shogun so far? Anything you say, we'll read on the show and react to it live in our latest episode.
That's right, everybody. Hope you enjoy this one. Have a great rest of your week, and we'll see you next time.
See ya.
Let's bring back the loincloth.